Hey y'all, welcome back to Group Therapy. I'm one of your hosts, Dr. Kristen Casey.
I'm licensed psychologist, Dr. Jessica Rabin.
And I'm licensed clinical social worker, Kristen Gingrich.
I'm apparently not a psychologist today because I forgot that part. But Justin's not with us today. He's out having fun. He didn't invite us. We're very upset. You know, yep. He actually said I'm out with all my other friends and I'm intentionally not inviting you guys because you're boring and you're introverts. So we're sad. But we'll have fun without him because today we're talking all about CPTSD. So settle in, take a seat, and welcome to group therapy. So what is CPTSD? I know that all three of us have had conversations in the group chat about it and, you know, how it's different than PTSD, and we're going to get all into it. But does anybody have like a working definition of what CPTSD is?
So I have to describe the letters are complex post-traumatic stress disorder. So we added kind of that term of complex on the beginning of PTSD.
I think that's a good start. Good start there.
Yeah,
let's define the letters.
I love it.
Let's start with the letters. And Jess, what does the Webster Dictionary say it is?
I didn't look up the Webster Dictionary. I have the ICD-11 open, and we'll talk more about that. But basically, CPTSD is an exposure to an event or series of events of an extremely threatening or horrific nature. Most commonly prolonged or repetitive events from which escape is difficult or impossible. And the example of events they include, but are not limited to, torture, concentration camps, slavery, genocide, and other forms of organized violence, prolonged domestic violence, repeated childhood sexual or physical abuse. And we can go into more detail about all this, but basically following that trauma, the development of all three core elements of PTSD are met, lasting several weeks. So re-experiencing the traumatic event, avoidance of reminders, and then that hypervigilance, so that persistent perceptions of heightened current threat. But in addition to that, we see people have this like additional characteristic, which is problems in affect regulation, beliefs about oneself as diminished, defeated, or worthless, and then difficulty sustaining relationships and feeling close to others. So that's really where the distinct difference is between PTSD and CPTSD. That's a lot of letters. I have to make sure I'm saying them in the right way. So those like three components that I just talked about are classified as like disturbances in self-organization.
Yeah.
I will stop talking now.
Right. And we did a whole episode on PTSD specifically. Mm-hmm. So we'll definitely talk about it a little bit in this episode. We're definitely going to focus more on that CPTSD. But one of the things I want to make sure that we make very clear before we kind of really dive into this is that we are not saying that CPTSD or PTSD, that one is worse off than the other. What we're really going to talk is about how they characterize differently, and that just because something happens over a prolonged period of time doesn't mean that it is any better or any worse than something that may have happened just once. And I kind of want to put out that disclaimer before we dive into, because we definitely don't want to invalidate anybody's trauma, because at the end of the day, trauma is trauma. But I know that sometimes there is that discourse that kind of happens of, well, this only happened to you once. This happened to me 35 times. At the end of the day, trauma is trauma. And however you choose to perceive that, is entirely, you know, valid. And so as we kind of dig into that, you'll definitely see, we'll kind of dig into like what makes these different, because they do manifest a little bit in different ways, right? We talk a lot about in the DSM, just in general, all of these diagnoses have Venn diagrams. They overlap in some capacities. The same with PTSD and CPTSD. They have so many overlaps, but there is those certain characteristics like Jess listed that make CPTSD just slightly different. And I think changes sometimes our approach in treatment because they have that like that dysregulation of self and things like that, that kind of just kind of make it just a smidge different.
Yeah, I love that you brought up KBI, the changes in treatment, because when I think about it, like, oh my gosh, are we splitting hairs, right? Like with CPTSD mm-hmm. and PTSD. But when I think about it, trauma is so deeply personal, you know? And mm-hmm. and I think that, especially with this new diagnosis, I mean, I think the original diagnosis of PTSD was what, introduced in 1980 in the DSM-3, if I'm thinking right. Jess, you probably know more.
No, I think so, but...
I think so. So
if you have my DSM-3.
Yeah. DSM-4. Well, I'm not saying you have, I'm not aging.
I know.
You had it. I figured you just knew, you know, like, oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, no, I don't, I'm not saying you're old. But you are the oldest one out of all four of us though, right?
No, Justin's the oldest.
Justin is. Oh yeah. Justin's an
Justin's
old man.
Older grandpa. Than me by
he's,
like,
he's a grandpa.
4 years, grandpa. 5 years.
That's right. So
what's here tonight?
Tonight, you are the elder. Okay, so you'll know about the DSM-3. But really, I think to KBI's point, it's such a change in treatment. Because think about it. If you treat anxiety related to a specific situation, and then you treat generalized anxiety disorder, those two treatments might look very different. It's not to say that one is worse mm-hmm. than the other, one's more intense mm-hmm. than the other. They both have their place. But I think labels do help guide that treatment. So I want to highlight that point, KBI. That's a really great mm-hmm. point. 100%.
Yeah. Yep. And going off that, KBI, too, I think, I don't know about you all, but for me, the term complex, if we think of like things that are complicated, we tend to assume they're like harder or more like, mm-hmm. oh, if this is a complex math problem versus just a simple, like the labels. But really, like you highlighted, it doesn't mean it's worse. It's just that additional piece of disturbances in self-organization that shows mm-hmm. up on top of all of the other mm-hmm. symptoms you would see in PTSD. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, just because you meet criteria for one or the other, exactly like you said, it's not worse or better.
Yeah.
Labels help some people and it can help mm-hmm. guide treatment, exactly as you all said.
Totally. And I think the thing that makes it complex is that specifier that it's usually these innate smallerish things that happen time and time and time and time and time and time and time again, and they interweave within that daily living and become a belief system in a way and become mm-hmm. kind of just that everyday living. And again, not to say it's better or anything like that, but it really kind of changes the perception of our daily lives. And I think that sometimes what makes it complex, because it's also building, a lot of times we build a belief system off of those things, and we build the way we view the world off of those things, and the way we view other people and our relationships to other people based off of those things, which make it really messy and really complex when it comes to treating it. I think it's also when it comes to treating it, because it's not just one instance mm-hmm. where like I usually use like an idea of like a car accident. Like you're in a car accident. Okay. We have this one instance. We know exactly what we're focusing on. We know exactly, you know, what happened, when it happened, all of that. When we're looking at a trauma that happens consistently over like abuse or neglect. Let's use abuse. Mm-hmm. Abuse that happens over the course of 3 or 4 years. The way that ingrains itself into your daily living and your belief system is so different. And the way that you approach that can be so different. And I think that's what makes it complex is that right there, is that, again, not to say that car accident wasn't horrific, because it very much does and can have those lifelong impacts, but it's definitely, you know, the way that it ingrains itself can look very, very different.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm even thinking too about like CPTSD versus BPD. And I think I'm just kind of reflecting too on like relationships and like how people capture relationships and how they kind of like, you know, with borderline, at least my thoughts are, when I look at borderline, I think there's a tendency to value and then devalue people, you know, based on your own self-image and the things that you're experiencing. With CPTSD, my understanding is that people tend to just kind of like avoid those relationships altogether. I could be wrong. But when I was reading the research, I was trying to kind of figure that out. And I don't know if you guys have more information, because I'm still trying to work through that in my own mind about the differences mm-hmm. with BPD.
Yeah, I, because I remember when we had Courtney on, this was a mm-hmm. question that she got, and knowing we were doing this episode, I definitely looked up some stuff, and it's interesting. I think a lot of the comparison with CPTSD and BPD goes to show how like nuanced our field is, because mm-hmm. on the surface, the behaviors may look very similar. So like they may share dissociation, unstable relationships, difficulty with emotion regulation, things like that. But from what I read, one of the most recognizable differences is like the underlying cause. We know mm-hmm. that both can be caused by trauma, but mm-hmm. BPD can be caused by both trauma and genetics, where just like PTSD, to meet criteria for CPTSD, there has to be an identifiable trauma. You can't meet criteria for PTSD or CPTSD if you have not had trauma. And then there was some other research on how the shared symptoms may present themselves differently. So exactly what you said, K10, so individuals with CPTSD may try to avoid forming close relationships due to that deep distrust, but mm-hmm. individuals with BPD seek out those close bonds, just have difficulty sustaining them. Another core difference I found was that concept of self-identity. So we know with BPD, and for anybody listening that hasn't listened to Courtney's episode, go back. It was our most listened to episode of 2023. But a central trait of that is, you know, not knowing who they are. And that may be underlying a lot of their emotion dysregulation. See, people with CPTSD have a more stable sense of self, but still have that emotion dysregulation. So that emotion dysregulation isn't necessarily from not knowing who they are or who their identity is. And then the only other thing I saw about like the difference is individuals with CPTSD with regard to emotion dysregulation tend to numb their emotions by withdrawing or dissociating. And then individuals with BPD try to like underregulate their emotions, in turn then may cause that over dysregulation of emotions.
Like an overcorrection.
So they're like trying to suppress, like I'm trying so hard, mm-hmm. where CPTSD we see more like just withdrawing or dissociating as ways to cope.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so interesting. There's a lot out there on CPTSD that I learned.
I'm learning so much because I'm not an expert in it. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, but I think I at least hear that a lot on social media. Like, what's the difference between CPTSD and BPD? And that was a question I've seen a lot, and we probably got it a lot.
It's because we look at it. I mean, it's all a Venn diagram. They all, mm-hmm. like, we share traits and we share pieces. And it does get confusing, absolutely, and kind of figuring out, like, where do I fall in any of this?
Mm-hmm. It could be confusing. Yeah, especially for someone who's out there who might be listening or experiencing something like, is it CPTSD or BPD? It feels like it's splitting hairs, but I think in therapy, Katie, to your original point, it's just so important because the way that we treat these things are so different. Like, for example, in BPD, to Jess's point and what I was learning too, it's like people with BPD might have that unstable sense of self, and it might show by like changing your goals and beliefs over time, you know, whereas people with CPTSD, they might have that, like Jess's point of like that consistent or stable sense of self, but it might be negative. Whereas people with BPD, they might fluctuate. So think about having a client in therapy where it's fluctuating, your treatment's going to look different than somebody who has that stable negative appraisal of themselves or, you know, their mind or, you know, who they are as a human. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. And I think some people might say, oh, what are the point of labels? That's kind of why, you know, for treatment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I think the overlap that we've been talking about with BPD really highlights that disturbances in self-organization component of CPTSD. And I just wanted to provide a little more information on that. So like I already said, severe and pervasive problems in affect regulation. So this could be heightened emotional reactivity to minor stressors, violent outbursts, reckless or self-destructive behavior, dissociative symptoms when under stress, emotional numbing, inability to experience pleasure or positive emotions. So even just reading that, like, how many other disorders may we see that in, yeah. right?
Every other one.
I know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The second component about, like, the persistent beliefs about oneself as diminished, defeated, or worthless, accompanied by pervasive feelings of shame, guilt, or failure related to the stressor. So that's an interesting caveat there. But exactly like you just said, K-10, you might have a stable sense of self, but that stable sense of self may be a very diminished, depleted sense of self. Mm-hmm. And then the difficulties in sustaining relationships and feeling close to others. So, you know, it, constantly avoiding, having little interest in relationships, social engagement. And then if there are, like, intense relationship, the person may have difficulty sustaining them due to distrust based on trauma history, et cetera. So I can totally see why so many people are like, is it BPD? Is it CPTSD? Because even just reading that, so much of the criteria for BPD came to mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I think, because I work with veterans with PTSD as an evaluator, mm-hmm. and I always think, like, when I'm evaluating these veterans who have been deployed to, like, several different places and engaged in combat and different times in their life and, like, different times in their career, I always think, like, is it PTSD or is it CPTSD? You know what I mean? Like, I, in my own mind, I'm, like, wondering about that. Cause I think depending on where you work too, like, sometimes, the diagnoses that you get are based on the setting too. So as an evaluator, there's only so many diagnoses that you could give based on, like, I do evaluations for veterans seeking service connection. And what that means is, like, if you incurred, like, a diagnosis or an injury during your time of service, the VA will pay you, you know, and say, hey, we're sorry, here's some money, basically. It's more in depth than that, but that's kind of the general sense of it. Which they should, because, you know,
I'm sorry, here's some money.
Like, oh my gosh, yeah, like, you know, but I sometimes wonder, because as I'm listening to CPTSD, and again, I'm not an expert here in that specifically, I'm just in the back of my mind, I have the PTSD criterion, and I'm like, okay, changes in relationships. Okay, that's technically part of PTSD too. Like a lot of them, like KBI said, it's a huge Venn diagram. It is such a hard thing, and that's why I think it's so important to, like, get assessed and get a diagnosis from someone who is well versed in this stuff. I know it's a privilege in some sense to get that, but it could be super helpful for people who are wondering, like, where is this coming from? You know.
Oh, and I think something that's interesting to note is that it is not actually in the DSM. It is in the ICD-11, correct, Jess?
Yeah.
But it is not actually a diagnosis in the DSM-5 or the DSM-5-TR.
Do we know why?
Because, like, straight up, nobody actually, because nobody actually talks to the people on the ground.
When they're
making these books, like, it's all when you look at, like, the list of people involved, and I'm not trying to shit on MDs or doctors, but, like, you don't see the people who are probably using this the most often involved in these discussions as the authors. So I do find that while it is in the ICD-11 too, like, this is also a term that a lot of us as therapists are using, but still diagnosing as PTSD. It's the only technical official diagnosis, because I don't even know, because I don't do insurance billing like that. So I don't even know if CPTSD in the ICD-11 even constitutes as a diagnosis that billable insurance will cover, because it's not technically in the purple. It's not even purple anymore. I think it's gray, but the purple book of Bibles of insurance companies.
It's literally 6B41 in the ICD-11.
Yeah. But I don't bill insurance, so I don't know if, I don't even know if they take ICD codes or if they take, like,
I have to bill ICD codes in the hospital. Yeah. So, know what I should have done today? I should have gone, because we have, like, everything is electronic. I should have typed in the code and see if it pops up.
Oh my God.
I'll do it and get back to you all.
You should do that.
But no, I mean, and I know all of us have had this conversation before, like prepping for this, like, you know, coming in not knowing a lot about CPTSD other than what I've learned from a lot of mental health professionals online who more specialize in trauma, generally speaking. I always heard like, oh, it's not an official diagnosis, it's not official diagnosis. And I was like, oh, it actually is in the ICD-11. But even then, the ICD-11 came out in January 2022. So it's only been an official diagnosis for less than 2 years. And I'm sure we're going to get into this, but that even makes it so hard to talk about treatments and what is the best approach and things like that, because it wasn't even a diagnosis until less than 2 years ago. And yes, before something becomes a diagnosis, people like propose all these criteria and stuff, but we can't research effective treatments until we know a diagnosis. And then I would argue, and I would love to hear y'all's thoughts on it, since it's not in the DSM, like you said, KBI, how many people are actually diagnosing CPTSD, and how are we going to have randomized controlled trials looking at research, like effective treatments, if it doesn't exist, quote unquote, for many of the people that are billing insurance?
No, because you're looking, are you looking at the ICD-11 now? Is it listed? So my question is because I have not looked at the ICD-11 because I don't bill insurance like that, but is it listed as a specifier or is it listed as its own independent diagnosis? Because I think that will also be something that's interesting, is will it enter as a specifier?
It's its own diagnosis. So it falls under the disorders specifically associated with stress. So post-traumatic stress disorder is the first diagnosis. The second one is complex post-traumatic stress disorder, prolonged grief, adjustment disorder, reactive attachment disorder, disinhibition, social engagement disorder, and then other specified disorders. So I didn't say this earlier. Oh, sorry. I was going to say, but exclusion criteria is PTSD. You can't have both CPTSD and PTSD.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, like, it just starts to encompass, right? When you start leveling, it's kind of like when you start entering into that, it's kind of like when you have depression, you also don't have seasonal affective disorder. It's just kind of a piece of that. It just gets worse in the winter. Like you can say you have that, but it's more like it's kind of now encompassed. But I also, because I just wonder if it'll end up being like a specifier in the DSM, because in the DSM, PTSD has acute, chronic. So I wonder if it like will have post-traumatic stress disorder, acute, chronic, or complex. Or if it'll just be its own diagnosis in that capacity. And that's just an interesting, like, you know, kind of thing to kind of think about, is because there are those differentials even between acute and chronic PTSD that while, you know, they have to fulfill all the same requirements, there are those additional that kind of specify it within that. Whereas, like, again, with complex PTSD, you're hitting every box for PTSD. Plus,
no, exactly.
You got me thinking now, because I'm like thinking about specifiers and how they're different. Like the really good example that you gave, KBI, was like the difference between major depressive disorder and then with the seasonal affective qualifier, like the specifier, versus in the IC or in the DSM-4, right? I believe it was like its own diagnosis. And when I think about specifiers, I think it's kind of like, picture yourself and then you have like a different outfit on. Like all three of us could have like different outfits on, and that's kind of what the specifiers are. Just say we all have PTSD, you have acute, I have chronic, like whatever it is. We're just wearing different outfits, but it's essentially very similar, but it just like looks a little different. So I do wonder if like it could be a specifier. I think the one thing I keep going back to is it seems like the origin is a little different, and I could be wrong. Again, I don't know much about CPTSD. I only know PTSD like at my core. But I do wonder about that, because if it is a specifier, then I could see it being in the DSM and it getting accepted a little quicker. I don't know if that's just me thinking differently, or just kind of wishful thinking that it would just get in there quicker.
But even the acute, like kind of even the differences between acute and chronic, mm-hmm. right? There are those differences between those that kind of separate those, which is why like it's kind of hard because like I can see where it would be beneficial to have it as its own diagnosis, but it also makes sense to also just have it as a specifier.
Yeah. And then I think of like, I'm just thinking the PTSD criterion. I'm thinking of like delayed expression. Like I'm just thinking about all those things too. Like how many qualifiers can you possibly have? Right. And so whenever I see a diagnosis, just say I get a new client or, you know, in an evaluator role, especially, and I see like a really specific diagnosis, it is so helpful, you know, to know exactly what that client is experiencing. So I think the specifiers are helpful. If I were to see CPTSD as a separate diagnosis, that's helpful too, you know? So I guess it would just depend on how, I know we're splitting hairs here, but like how the DSM wants to put it in there. I just hope it gets in there. Cause I, as an evaluator, I know I talk a lot about like my evaluator stuff is like with veterans, but I want to diagnose CPTSD so desperately, but the VA probably won't see it that way, you know? So it's hard. Yeah.
But I also think like, it's still, I still think it's valid though when you have that PTSD diagnosis.
Of course.
Like I think that like, you know, it's still valid and I get like that idea of like that little twinge. But I get why they're separate, absolutely.
Yeah. Cause when I see PTSD in someone's chart, I'm like, they've been through it, you know, like probably heavy stuff they've been through, you know what I mean? So I think that, yeah, for people who are listening, like PTSD is it's serious, you know, it's means that you've gone through something really, really hard, and not everybody that goes through something hard will receive a diagnosis of PTSD, but I think it's just as valid as that CPTSD for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's the thing that's so interesting about trauma is that we could all go through a trauma together. And each one of us will have a completely different reaction to that trauma. And one of us could have a debilitating reaction to it. One of us could walk away and be like, that's fine. I'm good. And the other could just be like, you know, sometimes it keeps me up at night, but I'm okay. And that's just, you know, again, we go back to the way that perception impacts us and whether we have protective factors, whether we have like one of my biggest pieces with trauma is that trauma forms more deeply when we're not given a platform to talk about it. And that a lot of times is what happens with, you know, a lot of times with complex is that we don't like, it's not given that ample time to talk about because it's usually happening consistently over time. And we don't realize it's happening sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you all really have me thinking about, like, should it be a specifier or should it be a different diagnosis? And I'm also trying to think, is there any other diagnoses in the DSM that, like, are separate, but, like, all the criteria are met? Because even, like, bipolar 1 and bipolar 2, they're still bipolar disorders. You just... Right? I need to pull it up.
Yeah. Bipolar 1, I think, doesn't need a depressive episode, but there's a manic episode. We're really going to test our knowledge here. And then I think with bipolar 2, it's just hypomania plus a depressive episode potentially, if I'm really...
Yeah, but I'm trying to think, are they like separate? Oh, they are.
Yeah, bipolar 1 and 2 are
separate.
So
they're listed out separately. Right. Bipolar 1 disorder.
Sorry.
And then bipolar 2 disorder is a separate disorder. So if that, honestly, I think, I don't know. Honestly, for me, it's what would get them in the DSM quicker.
Yeah.
Like whether it's a specifier or a different diagnosis. But so bipolar 1 and bipolar 2 are separate disorders. So that makes me more confident that CPTSD could be a separate disorder. Because I was trying to go through, I was like, of the depressive disorders, what is it? And I also, and this is so nuanced, but in my mind, like, especially reading through the ICD criteria and like all the information they have about the disturbances in self-organization and like the three criteria for that, like in my mind, a specifier is usually like a quick line or two. Mm-hmm. And like the disturbances of self-organization is like a whole nother set of additional criteria. I don't know. At the end of the day, I personally, and it sounds like you all agree, would love to see it in the DSM. I think the DSM in general needs to be way more trauma informed. But also because in addition to just like helping with accuracy of diagnosis, I think getting it into the DSM is going to help studies happen of effective treatments, funding, all that kind of stuff for research, which, yes, the ICD is the International Classification of Diseases. I'm sure they get plenty of funding for things, right? But at least in the mental health field, you know, like you said, KBI, like most people don't use the ICD. I didn't use the ICD until I worked in a hospital.
Same.
Like, until I worked, I mean, I use my DSM and then I have to like, the codes automatically convert when I'm billing in the system. But I don't know. It is so interesting.
Yeah, it'll definitely be. I thought it would come out with the TR.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a really good. That would have been a really good thing. Yeah.
So and it'll be interesting.
Oh god.
I said it'll just be interesting if it comes out in the six.
Can you imagine? That would be pretty cool.
We have to wait.
And then we gotta wait.
We're gonna have to wait.
We gotta wait like 12 freaking years.
No.
Well, let's see. The DSM-3 came out in the 90s. So in our lifetime, there's been the 3, the 4, the 4 TR, 5, 5 TR. You know, we've had...
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get it before we die.
Totally. And I know, again, we're splitting hairs here, but I was going through... for those of you who are in training or those of you who are like really big in diagnosing, like there's so many different sort of specifiers and I'm just going through. And I think with PTSD, the specifiers are depersonalization, derealization, delayed expression. I think the acute versus chronic, I think we're messing it up with another diagnosis because I remember acute versus chronic. I just cannot for the life of me place what diagnosis it is, but either way it's splitting hairs. But I think with PTSD, when you think about specifiers, like Jess was saying, it's really kind of like a little addition to kind of like really put it on there. But I also think too, that like, I don't know, I want to see it in the DSM. I just want it to get in there. Like I need it in there. I need it for my soul. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, I think it's just, we've just like, being boots on the ground, we have seen that there are these manifestations that are just so polar different, right? A reaction from someone who was in a car accident is different than someone who experienced prolonged child abuse, just in the way that manifests in symptoms. Again, it doesn't mean that the child abuse was worse than the car accident or the car accident was, that's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about the way that it kind of presents itself in its symptoms and that you're using the same criterion and the same kind of examples to try to categorize two different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome.
I also think it's important to note that if you have experienced a prolonged trauma or multiple repeated trauma, that doesn't necessarily mean you will develop complex PTSD. You may, you know, develop PTSD because you don't have that disorganized sense of self, which goes back to everything we've been saying, but especially you, KBI, highlighting so well, like the nuance in trauma. And trauma is so individualized to individuals. That was so repetitive. I was like, individualized to individuals. But like, it is. So, you know, just like you said, we could go through the same thing. But that is something that when I was reading through the ICD-11, it's like, just because you have a prolonged exposure doesn't necessarily mean you automatically are going to meet criteria for CPTSD. Mm-hmm. And somebody that only was exposed to a car accident only, that was in quotes, is not going to. Because it's actually interesting, because if you look at the language of how it's written in the ICD-11, it says exposure to an event or series of events. So it could be one, but like I said, it's most commonly repetitive
yeah,
and yes. prolonged. Yeah. But depending on what the event is, I can definitely see how, you know, pervasive problems in affect regulation, persistent diminished beliefs about ourselves, things like mm-hmm. that can evolve.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Totally. And I even think of two people who may have experienced the same trauma together and how differently they might experience it afterwards. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. some people might get a diagnosis, other people might not, or they might get a different diagnosis based on the trauma itself. So I think it's so important to look at those nuances and differences for sure.
Well, and we look at, right, we tend to look a lot at sibling sets, mm-hmm. who, especially with CPTSD, like we look at sibling sets who both grew up maybe in an abusive household or in a household with significant substance use or domestic violence or anything like that. And the age plays a role in that, that like, mm-hmm. you know, if you were 9 and your sibling was 2, your perceptions of the events that occurred are vastly different just based on your cognitive abilities at that time.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
That's a really, really, really good point. Yeah.
And so we find that a lot of times, you know, I hear frequently, whether it's with PTSD or anything like that, like, why am I struggling so badly and my siblings are not? And mm-hmm. a lot of times it just depends on, I think a lot of pieces play into that, right? Personality, protective factors. So were there any protective factors for your siblings that you didn't have? Mm-hmm. I remember growing up, like I spent a lot of time at home, whereas mm-hmm. my brother spent a lot of time at a babysitter's, avoiding a lot of that stuff. And so our kind of experiences were very different in just like our perceptions of that. Yeah. And so it's one of those things that like, that's what we go back to. It's so personal that mm-hmm. we can't play the comparison game in this, because we can look at something and be like, wow, that person had it so much worse, but they're okay. Mm-hmm. But the reality is maybe they had 15 protective factors that helped them yeah. out, and like their parents got them into therapy and like all of these other pieces that play into a role to kind of mitigate symptoms. So I think that's what makes this so nuanced and so personal. Mm-hmm. And again, that plays into the complex part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you brought that up, KBI, because I was actually just like looking at some notes I wrote about like children and adolescents being more vulnerable than adults to developing it just during that like mm-hmm. period of time. But even going back to like the original definition, it talked about the prolonged or repetitive events from which escape is difficult or impossible. So exactly in the mm-hmm. example you gave, wow. if like your brother's at a babysitter, but you're at home, or I'm even thinking if like there's a family where there's a 16-year-old child, but a 6-year-old child. The 16-year-old can probably drive, get out of the house more, right. moves out at 18. So maybe they only have a couple years of that
yeah.
trauma versus the younger child as well. And yeah, it's amazing how, like, and we all know this as mental health professional, but how much, not only is trauma individualized, but how much it can impact so many different aspects of our lives. Like one thing I mm-hmm. found with regard to like children and adolescents, those who meet criteria for complex PTSD are more likely to demonstrate cognitive difficulties. So mm-hmm. the examples they gave, like problems with attention planning and organization, what does that sound like? ADHD. Mm-hmm. And it may interfere with academic and occupational. Like, it's just so,
yeah.
I don't know. Our bodies and minds are amazing, but it also shows that, I mean, we always talk about traumas stored in the body. It's amazing how trauma truly rewires what you think, feel, how you behave, all of that.
It changes you for sure. And depending on the type of trauma and all that, because I'm even thinking of like what you just said, Jess, and I'm like thinking about, I can't remember what criterion it is, like changes in mood and cognition for PTSD, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. feeling a deep sense of like, I don't know, changes in mood, obviously, right? And then changes in cognition, like, I don't trust the world or I don't trust other people. And I think with CPTSD, it's just different. Like you said, I'm thinking of like executive functioning with CPTSD, of like planning, organization, like all those prefrontal cortex things, you know what I mean? So you're right. I think it just changes your brain. It changes who you are. It's just so interesting, like the whole thing.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just, you know, and it will just continue. You know, I think we'll just continue to learn about it as mm-hmm. we dive. And who knows, maybe in 30 years, we'll have three other different versions of it as we kind of navigate kind of these differences and things like that. Because like I said, like I even think of, like, if we go back to specifiers, I think of depression and I think of the five different specifiers under depression mm-hmm. and how they're all at the core the same, but they have all just specific things that make them just slightly different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's some tweaks that make it unique.
Yeah. So what about treatments?
Well, the scholar Jess's point earlier of like, it's new, you know, it's a new kid on the block. I do wonder if like, I do wonder, like, when I think about PTSD and just working with PTSD when I was at the VA, and doesn't mean it just has to be military trauma by any means, but when I think of like the core evidence-based treatments for PTSD, I think of EMDR, prolonged exposure, mm-hmm. cognitive processing therapy, like there's a bunch of others. And then with CPTSD, I would wonder if it would be similar or not, you know, just depending.
I personally, like, I agree, like with the EMDR, here I go again. I think DBT can be really helpful. Not in the reprocessing of the trauma aspect, but that sense of self, that sense of regulation, mm-hmm. that relationship piece that comes with CPTSD, that we see a lot with borderline personality. Like, I think that distress tolerance, emotional regulation, interpersonal effectiveness, mm-hmm. all of that can be really helpful in some of those symptoms with CPTSD. And I would love to see like an EMDR laced with that. Like,
can you imagine they just marry each other a little bit? That would be the most beautiful marriage ever. But no, I'm with you.
EMDBT.
Let's patent that. No, I'm kidding. It's a lot of work. But I think DBT skills can be really effective for pretty much anybody who's experiencing those things. But yeah, I think notably with CPTSD, especially with the distress tolerance, because I just imagine people with CPTSD experiencing a lot of stress, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And an ability to kind of like really ground yourself in those moments, especially when you're triggered, must be hard.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I was thinking literally the same thing. Like everything I looked up was like, well, EMDR, CPT, prolonged exposure, because that's what we're studied for. PTSD. Mm-hmm. And exactly what you said, KBI, I was like, okay, the part that gets confused with borderline a lot, why wouldn't we use the evidence-based intervention for borderline? And then I also mm-hmm. found something else. This was from like one paper in 2019 when they were trying to basically say, like,
this that's is an needs- old study. Jess.
I know. Ooh, needs to be a
ancient.
Bring your own rules.
But no, it was just like talking about treatments and, you know, suggesting, but I had never heard of this skills training and effective interpersonal regulation, the STAIR model, but really targeting exactly what you just said, KBI, those like self skills, the disorganization of self. And then the only other thing I found pretty par for the course, antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, sleep medications, all the things we would use for PTSD. And I would imagine, and I could be wrong, and I'd be interested to see the literature on this, whatever works for PTSD is going to help those core symptoms that overlap. Yeah, there absolutely. Needs to be something else, though, because we have this whole other component of the disturbances in self-organization.
And that's where I wonder, like, where, like, DBT and things like that can come in and fill in those gaps, mm-hmm. like, creating, like, a new little monster treatment.
I feel like, though, that's what we do a lot in the mental health field, especially, like, in the CBT realm of things. Like mm-hmm. mindfulness-based CBT is literally ACT and cognitive behavioral therapy.
They just had a little baby. Yeah.
They had a little baby. So I feel like
when you all need CPT and DBT to have a little baby. CPT and DBT. Like have a little
cognitive processing, dialectical behavioral therapy. CPDBT.
Or like dialectical cognitive processing. Like,
we'll
figure it out.
No, we love our bunches of letters in the mental health field.
So many acronyms. And we talk about it and like people are like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And we're like, yeah, you just say the letters and I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Totally. Like sometimes when people say stop, I literally think of the stop skill from DBT. Like I just
can't get
the stop sign in my head, like at all. I'm like, oh.
Know what else?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh,
you won't be able to get out of your head.
The skull has shown.
The results of this study. No.
What?
So the question I'm going to pose to you all is, how do you think early maladaptive schemas, so you know, are... beliefs, KBI, you already kind of touched on this, but like themes, patterns, memories, emotions, cognitions, how we view ourselves, others, the world around us, blah, 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 all that fun stuff, are similar or different among individuals with CPTSD and PTSD?
They're similar.
Boy. Okay. I feel like, and I don't want to undermine the PTSD diagnosis, so I'm trying to like make it make sense in my head, but I think the schemas for people with CPTSD might be more fixated and pervasive potentially than those with PTSD. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to word that in the right way.
I think I understand
what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't have the words. I think you worded that well. Cool.
Okay.
You were so, what I was doing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I kind of just poorly defined what a maladaptive schema is, but those broad pervasive themes or patterns, memories, emotions, cognitions regarding oneself, relationship with others developed in early childhood. And so this study looked at 15 different types of early maladaptive schemas. I'm not going to go into them all. We always link the article so you can look it up if you're interested, because that's going to bore you all. We've already highlighted this a million times, but you know, if we're looking at CPTSD and PTSD, we have all those same clusters, the re-experiencing, avoidance, persistent sense of threat. And then with CPTSD, we have the disturbance of self-organization or DSO. So this study, when examining results, compared those with no diagnosis, so they met no clinical PTSD or CPTSD diagnosis, or PTSD to those with CPTSD. So we have CPTSD and then the other two groups. Mm-hmm. And CPTSD had statistically significant higher scores across all schema, with the exceptions of the self-sacrifice schema. And then the authors examined association between just the PTSD symptoms and then the disturbances in self-organization symptoms across those with a diagnosis of PTSD and CPTSD. And PTSD was found to be significantly associated with the schema of mistrust abuse, where DSO, so the disturbances in self-organization, was found to be associated with the schemas of abandonment / instability, social isolation / alienation, subjugation, I can never say that word, and emotional inhibition. And then further, authors found no individual schema predicted PTSD symptoms. However, the schemas of emotional deprivation, abandonment / instability, social isolation / alienation, defectiveness, shame, enmeshment, underdeveloped self, subjugation, emotional inhibition, and insufficient self-control, self-discipline significantly predicted those DSO symptoms. So really the results suggest that schemas are more relevant to the DSO cluster of CPTSD rather than PTSD itself. And with regard to treatment, as we were just talking about, this suggests that maybe like schema therapy would be beneficial to target that DSO cluster. So I know I said a lot of words there, but
it was a lot.
But I mean, K10, exactly what you were predicting.
I got it right.
You did. I mean, yeah, it's more pervasive, more clusters, but I think it goes back to everything KBI was saying earlier, how typically if you're exposed to these repeated prolonged traumas, especially in childhood, it's going to change how you view yourself and the world and people.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that we would see that more in CPTSD versus maybe somebody that I'm going to go with the car accident example that you gave, KBI, like was in a car accident, but maybe they were 25, right? Your schemas are already developed by then.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting. Cause I don't know. I don't know if this is the right way to look at it, but like, I feel like schemas are like lenses kind of like not how you view the world necessarily, but it might like your lens based on the trauma. You know what I mean? Like, how you view other people or how you view yourself based on that and all that. And if that's kind of like more, I'm thinking of like putting on those like really cool like glasses, you know, if you ever come to movies 3D, I don't want to like make fun of it. You know what I mean? But it's like, I'm thinking of like, okay, what lens are you wearing? It's so interesting. Jess, you come up with the coolest things. And I think it's like, makes me realize there's so much more research we need to.
Well, and that's the thing, like this study just came out and it goes back to what we were just saying about treatment. Like, we don't really know, but if we could, now we have criteria, we start having measures to assess for that criteria. We can start actually doing research. And okay, so this is now saying, oh, we found that negative maladaptive schemas are predictive of the DSO cluster. Now let's apply a therapy to target that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
cool stuff.
Know what else is cool stuff?
The polls, baby. Let's
the
go.
The polls.
Let's go.
Drive in the polls.
The cool stuff. Cool. So I did the polls, and thank you all for talking so I could pull the polls up, because it's very hard when I have to go back to back between Google Scholars and this. But I was taking a book out of KBI's or K10's page and just kind of quizzing you all. In the polls this week. So the first poll question I asked is, have you heard of CPTSD? So the options were yes, and I have a good understanding of it. Yes, but I'm sure of exactly what it is, or no. So what do you all think?
The first one. I'm just going to get risky.
Do you think yes, and I have a good understanding of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say with I was about to be like with social media, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 59% said yes, good understanding. 34% said yes, unsure what it is, and no said 7%. So to that 7%, I hope you now know what it is. And to that 34%, I hope you have learned more. And even the 59%, because like I know for me, and I don't know if you all felt this way, like I thought I knew until I started reading, and I was like, oh
yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't know nearly as much.
I know nothing.
You know, I feel like that's kind of like being a therapist. It's like you start out like really confident with less skills, and you're like, yeah, I got this. And then the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And then you're like, oh my gosh.
Like, I know nothing. Who let me out of my cage? I don't know.
CPTSD is the result of a single acute traumatic experience, traumas that are prolonged or repetitive, genetics, disorganized attachment to a parent.
Two. Second one.
Second one? Yes. And our group members got that. 97% guessed that one. 2% said...
Because our group members rock.
They're so fucking smart.
So, 2% said a single acute traumatic experience, and 1% said disorganized attachment.
They were just playing with us. They were just messing with us, you know.
They were like, oops, my finger slipped.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing about disorganized attachment, I threw that in there because of the overlap with BPD. And I did read something that, like, depending on the trauma, obviously, if it's like abuse or neglect, it could end up in disorganized attachment. So
true.
That was kind of a trick question. Anyways, All of these are core elements of both PTSD and CPTSD, except re-experiencing the traumatic event, deliberate avoidance of reminder of the trauma, persistent perceptions of heightened threat, or disturbances in self-organization.
I'm not gonna lie, my ADHD, like, I blanked out a little bit right there.
No, you're kind of like, I'm like, it's disturbances in self-organization.
Like, I thought it was the last one. I was like, I wanted to speak. I'm like, wait. Okay, cool.
No, that's fine. And our group members got that. 61% said that. 18% said re-experiencing. 12 persistent perceptions of heightened threat. And 9 avoidance of the trauma. All of the following are disturbances in self-organization seen in CPTSD, except affective dysregulation, negative self-concept, instability of identity, or disturbance in relationships. Do you all remember what it is?
Fuck.
I'm asking 2 ADHDers, and I'm like doing a like final exam.
Yeah, you're like doing. I'm like, you lost me after 2. I'm like, I can't.
Wait, say the first 2 again. Sorry, Jess.
Affective dysregulation, negative self-concept. So, what is not in the
self-organization? Those 2 are part of it.
Yeah. So is it instability of identity or disturbances in relationships?
No. We got a 50-50 going on. We got a 50-50. If you're on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which one would you pick, KBI? Like right now, $1 million. Like,
I don't know. I need to see it written down.
Me too. Literally.
Hi.
Okay, I'm just going to go with D.
I'll just tell you all. Disturbances in relationships are not part of it. You all are like, it's instability of identity, actually.
I have to see it. My brain can't process words.
I also, the more I'm doing this, I'm like, I was really mean. I feel like I was like making a test because I put that in because of borderline personality disorder as well. But most people said affective dysregulation, followed by instability of identity. Yes, at 38 and then 32. And then CPTSD is an official diagnosis in the DSM-5-TR, the ICD-11, both the DSM and ICD, and neither. It's not an official diagnosis.
It's never neither. Don't ever pick that on a standardized. Joking.
I mean, I did because I didn't realize it was in the ICD-11.
Until I texted KBI.
She's like, you just so you know. She's like, just so you know, you dumb bitch.
I did not say that.
You have a master's degree in it.
She's like, you and your fucking master's degree got it wrong.
Dissertation right in ass. Okay, sorry.
What did I actually say to you, KB? I did say just so you know, but I also said I did not know either, and neither did K-10.
You're like, you literally said, Kristen, you're a dumbass bitch.
Yep. That's exactly what I said.
Leave her alone. Leave Jess alone.
That's exactly what I said. So we know it's in the ICD-11, which all of us learned together to get ready for this podcast. No, literally all of us.
Yeah. We literally did not know. Yeah.
Yeah. But 57% of our group members said neither. It's not an official diagnosis.
Wow.
So,
and I think that's because we talk a lot about, like, I will say, like, I'll talk a lot about in my lives and say that it's not an official diagnosis because I go, like, for me, I was working out of the DSM in my previous job. Like, I wasn't working from an ICD. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was not an official diagnosis. And even then, even in the ICD-11, like, is it seen as an official diagnosis because of that, or like, how is that being, you know what I mean?
Yeah. How's it being used? And well, cause I don't know who actually, like, if you're not in a medical setting, who uses the ICD-11?
Literally. Right.
I never used it until I worked in a hospital. And by use it, I use that term lightly. Like I said, I use the DSM and I type in the diagnosis and it converts it to an ICD code for me. But
when I do evaluations, I need the ICD, but it's only because
the VA wants though?
That. It's just the VA. Yeah. But if I was doing an evaluation, and if I was doing like the other evaluations that I do, I use the DSM. Like I don't use the ICD. Yeah. It depends.
Yeah. Well, and that's what... in KBI and my conversation, despite her saying I called her a dumbass bitch. That's not how it actually went, but that's what we talked about. Like, you know, I learned a lot about CPTSD from other mental health professionals on social media talking about it. Mm-hmm. And that's what it was always said. And then I was doing research for this and it was like ICD-11. And I was like, what?
That's cute.
What do you mean? And then I was like, oh, maybe they're like trying to put it in the ICD-11. I was like, wait, no, the ICD-11's out. I'm very confused. And then I clicked on the ICD-11. I was like, no, it's literally there. And there's whole criteria and stuff.
Jess was like, for the first time in my life, I was wrong.
The only time she wasn't even wrong. She was just curious. She was like, maybe.
Channeling maybe Justin. Get curious about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so all of that to say to any of our group members that guess neither, we were with you until 48 hours ago.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Know what else we're with you with? That doesn't make sense.
What in the lack of English was that?
I was trying to do a transition to the group member questions. Oh. It clearly did not work.
But you know what always works?
Oh, for us,
the group member questions.
That was such a solid pickup. Like,
I'm glad I screwed it up so that you could
just dribbling a little bit and give you guys
dribbling.
Like.
Pass.
Let me wipe that. Oh, I thought you were talking dribbling like.
No, I meant like basketball.
Like basketball.
Not like.
What is happening? Katie is out of commission for 5 minutes before she reads these group member questions.
I'm going to turtle it for a second.
Dribble? Is that drool? Not dribble?
No, anyways, dribbling. Continue. You dribble a little out of your mouth. You've never used that term? I know the group members know what I'm talking about. And there are people out there who've used
it. I think
that.
We're going to be polarized and it's just like muffins and donuts. Like, I don't know if this is going
to... Dribble or drool?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, because a drool is like a slow. A dribble is like, like when you accidentally, like the water doesn't quite make it in your mouth and it dribbles down your chin.
We need a dribble drool.
Okay. So it's not spit. It's the water.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
I can see it. With you now. I might be team dribble.
I don't know where I stand. This is new information.
Brenna from Idaho, Utaho, or Weedaho.
Oh,
that's literally what it says. Is there a definite number of repetitive traumas that make one develop CPTSD? I feel like twice is too small to develop it, but there's also probably not a solid number.
Mm. No. Sorry. Yeah. I was just like, no, there's not a solid number.
I think it's definitely, I think we go back. It's personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think even just, I think you were reading it before. It said one or more, right? Like, yeah, I don't want to split hairs, but.
It says an event or series of events.
Okay, an event. And then it's like, when I think about that, just because I think too deeply into things, just how my brain works, I'm like, one event, does that mean, what if the duration was like?
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's the thing. Like,
literally, like, it could be one, but it could be prolonged. I don't know. Yeah. So,
well, like, I think exactly. Of like wartime. I think of war, mm-hmm. I think of like, you know, going to war. That, like, I went to Iraq. That is one time. Now, there are things within that that can be so, like, I think it's all in semantics, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's gotta be.
Is that the right word?
But that's like, I'm even looking at what they include. Like, okay, one of the things is torture. If you are tortured continuously for 48 hours, just say, who's to say that that's like, is or is not quote unquote long enough, because that's one event for a prolonged period of time. But it's not like you have to have three events to meet criteria.
Interesting.
But I think it goes back to like, and I know we keep talking about it's so personal and everybody responds differently, going back to the car accident, like all three of us could be in the same car accident and two of us have no trauma symptoms and one does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or like one meets full criteria for PTSD, one maybe acute stress disorder, and then the other one's like, I'm bad.
Absolutely. Anonymous asks, why does it feel like everyone has CPTSD? I think, I honestly think.
Just the way you asked it.
Yeah. Like, it's like you have something against Anonymous. Like they actually.
Why does it feel? Well, because I hear this all the time, right? I get this question all the time with everything. Why does everybody now have ADHD? Why does everybody all now have autism? And I don't think it's that everybody has it. I think it's that we're talking about it more. Right?
Yeah.
We used to, 20, 30 years ago, it was, don't air your dirty laundry. We don't talk about that. That's shameful. Like, and now we've kind of entered into the world of social media on top of like this, like we are talking about it more. And so I don't think it's that we're seeing it more. I think it's that people are talking about it more.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been there at the level it's been there, I believe. It's just, we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm. And I think people have, like, when I think of diagnoses, I think it's like a construct in which you can explain your experience, you know, and other people might be able to be like, oh, okay, I get that, you know? And then I think too, in 2023, like think about, we could talk about all the world events going on right now. Like there's so many things happening. And then I think too, that like people are, to your point, KPI, I think talking about it more, they have like less shame about like, no, I am struggling with this. I am. I'm straight up not having a good time here. I'm struggling, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think just to add too, as we've talked about, this is a new diagnosis in the ICD-11 as of 2022. It's not even in the DSM. Mm-hmm. But when people, especially on social media, are talking about it, and somebody who may have been diagnosed with PTSD listens to a licensed mental health professional talk about CPTSD, and they're like, oh my gosh, no, that fits my lived experience. Totally. But there wasn't a word for it. Like, how many times have you all like posted something, and maybe it's like, I don't know, a word like rumination or dissociation, and people are like, there's a word for what I experience?
Yeah.
It's like giving language to an experience that people didn't have before. And we also have to think about just like access to information. And I know we all do this with our platforms. Like for many mental health content creators, I don't want to speak for other disciplines, our goal is to make accurate information more accessible to people. Mm-hmm. So not only are we talking about it more, exactly like KBI said, more people are now getting this information that they did not previously have.
100%.
Absolutely. Okay. Rebecca from New York says, I grew up in 14 foster homes. The last foster home was the most abusive. It feels like it doesn't matter what happened to me. More like it sucks to be you situation. How can I learn what happened to me matters? And I think like when I look at that, one of the things that comes to mind is like, you know, we do want our trauma validated. We do want, like, we do look validation in that of like for someone else to say, wow,
that was hard.
That was hard. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's also important, you know, at the end of the day, it truly only matters how you feel about it and that you validating your own experience. And I know, like, coming from someone who has experienced trauma, there is a different level when someone validates that and says, wow, that shit's hard. I mean, just knowing, like, kind of saying, like, you growing up in 14 foster homes, as someone who works in the foster care system now, like, knowing how difficult that is to grow up away from your biological parents and kind of move from home to home and have that sense of instability, like, it does matter. It matters deeply. But at the end of the day, like I think it comes down to, does it matter to you?
I agree. Yeah. I think for at least the clients that I work with who have the same sentiments as Rebecca, I always go back to like, what can you control? You can't really control how much people validate your trauma. And if you really think about it, if you really truly think about it, you're the one who experienced it. You have all the nuance, you have all the information, you have all the emotions, you have all the experiences. And if you're able to validate yourself for those experiences and you're able to feel that feeling of validation like you would for someone else validating it, it's probably going to feel and hit a little different over time. Yeah. You know, always nice when somebody could say, like KBI said, like, oh my gosh, like that was really hard, or like that sounds terrifying, or like whatever that is. It's so nice to hear those things. And I think when you're able to do that for yourself, that's kind of where there's like a little bit of a shift, not for everybody, mm-hmm. but in the clients that I've worked with in their healing journey of like, I'm not relying on other people to validate this. Like, I know it was hard. Like, I know that I struggled and then it was really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just kind of thinking about the Google Scholar shorts that we just talked about and like schemas, I wonder, just like, what?
Just can't help yourself.
Like, no, but I'm like, think about like schemas and like this idea of, you know, how do I can't remember the exact wording, like that it matters. Like, did you grow up with a schema? Were you told like your experiences don't matter? Is that something that like messages you received as a child based mm-hmm. on your lived experiences that you have to like unlearn or re-teach yourself in many ways? Yeah. Like, so why is it that you don't feel like they matter? Is that true mm-hmm. to you? Or is it what you've been told by other people? So to pull a Justin, get really curious about where that comes from. And, you know, maybe if therapy is accessible to you, do some schema work, do some like, I'm going to say inner child work. I know that's not like a formal modality, but like working through that stuff.
I agree with that. KBI is having a coughing fit.
I know. I'm like, what is happening?
Because she can't talk right now because she's muted and she's coughing. I can tell it's like a really deep cough. Like it's intense.
It just like came out of nowhere. I was like, I saw you went to mute
right after I finished. Oof. I was like, I'm very confused because she has to ask the next question. And I was like, oh, that's like, what's happening.
Like, I don't know. And like none of them have the questions because I have it on my computer because that's what I like to do. I like them to be surprised. Lily from Somewhere Only We Know. That's what they put. If you know, you know.
So sweet.
First of all, thank you so much for talking about this. Yeah, no, she has no idea.
I thought it was sweet.
My question is, how can we, especially as someone with complex PTSD, deal with the fact that it's still misunderstood and not acknowledged in a lot of places, even with some therapists? It feeds into the fear of not feeling safe and threatened and alone. At least this is my experience, and my therapist told me they feel like it too. Since PTSD has only started to be more understood in its complexity in the last decades.
Just because it's not recognized everywhere doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Like, I think of, you know, so many things in life, but especially in the mental health field or the medical field. Just because we don't have a name for something doesn't mean it's not there. I can imagine the frustration comes in with like, if you're looking for a therapist that specializes in CPTSD and therapists are like, well, it's not in the DSM. Like I don't have, cause I would imagine, and just letting you know, we also, at least the three of us on this podcast that probably came through, are frustrated too with the lack of information we have on it. Cause we know it's a real thing and we know how much the official diagnosis, having more information on, treatments and things like that would be helpful to so many people. I think right now part of it is acceptance that there's a lot of unknown, but knowing that just because there's a lot of unknowns and it's not commonly used in different realms doesn't mean it doesn't exist or that your experiences aren't any less valid.
Yeah.
I want to add to it, but there's nothing that I would say differently. I agree 100%. That was beautifully said. I think about like people, I'm even like thinking deeper into like people who have like rare conditions or something, and like other people might not even know about it or recognize it. You know, it's
yeah.
doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's a real thing.
Exactly.
You know, it's a real exactly. experience that you're having. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ronnie from California asks, is there any correlation between chronic suicidal ideation and CPTSD?
Oh.
So the ICD-11 has a little blurb. I mean, all it says is suicidal ideation and behavior, substance abuse, depressive symptoms, psychotic symptoms, and somatic complaints may be present with CPTSD. So in all mm-hmm. of that to say, I would say yeah. yes, but also just thinking of trauma. Like if we're mm-hmm, taking yeah. like just PTSD, mm-hmm. suicidality with that.
Yeah.
Well, and you just think of, I think of the ACEs, right? And I know we didn't touch a lot on that specifically with this, but like when you have more than one ACE, your chance of experiencing suicidal ideation or suicide attempts drastically increases as mm-hmm. you gain those. So again, like as that trauma is kind of done over and over again, or if you experience multiple, that passive or even active, you know, it makes sense that it would be at a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
I'm even thinking of like, and again, I only have the PTSD criterion because it's embedded in my brain, like changes in mood and cognition, changes in mood, right? Like just say you're feeling a sense of like low mood or like borderline depression over like what's going on. It's not captured as depression in the PTSD criterion. But then I think like anybody who experienced complex PTSD would probably feel some sort of way, right? And if it's really intense, I mean, a lot of people do resort to thinking about suicidal ideation if it's passive or active or whatever it is. So I can imagine that being a part of it. Again, I'm operating off of limited information, but I would imagine it would be.
Yeah. Hey, Melissa from Oklahoma asks, and this is something we've kind of touched upon already, is it possible to have CPTSD on top of traditional PTSD? I went through a long period of abuse, but I also have specific instances of sexual assault. Can they be treated the same way? And I think we've talked about that one of those qualifiers is that you don't qualify for that PTSD, correct, Jess?
Yeah, you or just not can't
that
you don't both.
Qualify, but that you can't have both because it kind of envelops.
Yes, because to meet criteria for CPTSD, you have to meet all the criteria for PTSD. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't have both because it would be repetitive. But I think if I'm understanding correctly, what was asked was like, could I have CPTSD from like one thing and PTSD from another? And based on what I've seen in the ICD-11, we don't differentiate that way. It's based off of symptoms, mm-hmm. not off of the trauma.
Yeah.
You have to experience a trauma, but it's based on, do you have the disorganization of self
mm-hmm.
in addition to it?
Are they kind of asking like, can it form into CPT? Like, am I understanding that right? Can it form into it?
Is or it, are they asking Well, this? No. Is it possible to have both diagnoses at the same time?
Okay. Yeah. I'm following now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And then the second part was, are they treated the same? We've already kind of covered that too. I would argue that the core features of PTSD that are seen in CPTSD would be treated mm-hmm. the same. But then we need yeah. that
mm-hmm.
additional, which you two are going to create your trauma DBT modality.
Oh, yes. Let's go.
Let's go.
Address those disorganization of self-concept. Symptoms. Mm-hmm.
Isabella from Canada asks, why do you think people tend to avoid to be diagnosed with CPTSD? Or maybe trauma in general. Yeah. Why do people avoid it?
I mean, one of the criteria is avoidance, but like, I don't know.
I'm glad
sorry,
you said trauma because
I think
like,
for me,
people don't avoid it. There is no diagnosis unless you work in a hospital symptom and code under the ICD.
Yeah. I think people avoid it because, you know, when you have that diagnosis, like, it makes it real.
It does make mm-hmm. it real.
And for yeah. a lot of people, like, for a lot of people, they like it being real because they feel validated. But a lot of people sometimes struggle just with the idea of having a diagnosis, It may not have anything to do with the things that they experience, but, oh, wow, I have a mental, this, right? They use the term, I have a mental illness now. Mm-hmm. And they tend to look at it in that way versus like an explanation of symptoms or a name to symptoms. I think that people avoid for like a lot of reasons, right? They don't want those things on their record. Maybe like, you know, trauma specifically, right? When there's a lot of sometimes shame that gets associated with that, depending on different pieces of like, oh, I wasn't able to deal with this. So I have like a lot of stuff comes up. And I think that that's why people do avoid that.
I'm on the same page. I think about people who are worried about if a diagnosis will affect their ability to get a job or like their ability to like, oh my gosh, will my family know? Like there might be this misinformation about where the diagnosis goes. And I think with the people that I work with, they're always worried like, is my supervisor going to find out? Is my chain of command going to know? Like all that stuff of like, if I have PTSD, is that going to, and again, I work with veterans, right? So is my diagnosis of PTSD going to inhibit me from like making rank or like really getting to a place where I could excel in my career? And who knows? You know, I mean, it's hard to say. I want to say no, but you just kind of never know how things will shake out. But I agree with you, KBI. I think also it might be that acceptance piece of like, if it's the diagnosis and it's on paper, I'm going to have to kind of deal with it then. You know, it's tough.
Yeah. Bree from Ohio asks, what's a good coping mechanism for when you're stuck in a constant loop of thinking about the trauma that caused your CPTSD?
I feel like coping skills are so individualized, but I mean, so my first thought, like when thinking about like trauma in general and like repeated memories of the trauma, do you have a go-to distraction coping skill that can engage you to keep your mind on if grounding techniques or mindfulness to bring you back to the present moment. For some people, like I'm thinking of a patient I'm working with that has a lot of trauma, and journaling or talking to somebody about it rather than just staying in her head is really helpful. So I think it just really depends on the person.
Yeah, and I think the core tenet of like trauma treatment is reducing avoidance for most evidence-based treatments with trauma. So I do think that that could also be super stressful for people as they're on their healing journey. And then also there has to be this sense of like, I can't live in this 24/7. Like to Jess's point, like, can you do mindfulness things? Can you engage in something that could be helpful? It's hard to give like a cookie cutter coping skill, because I think I'm just thinking about the people that I've worked with and even personal experience, there are coping skills that might work for one client and they're completely like not okay for another client. You know what I mean? Like even mindfulness is super helpful for most people. And I think for some people, they might be like, oh, I'm in it too much. My mind won't stop. Right. Like, I'm having all these thoughts now. Like, and even though mindfulness is supposed to be paying attention without judgment on purpose to one thing, I mean, you might actually have that loop too. I mean, for some people, they might not be able to stop those thoughts too. So I think it's really hard to say, but obviously if people have access to therapy, that's helpful just because everything's unique, but.
Alice from Pennsylvania asks, can someone with CPTSD ever be fully recovered? And kind of like as someone who, and we talked a little bit about this in the BPT episode with Courtney, is what do you think recovered is? Because the reality is that you will never get to a point like in recovery where that stuff never happened. The difference is that one of the things that I say about recovery specifically, like even with mine, is like, is what happened to me still driving the bus, or am I driving the bus now? Does what happened to me have control over me, or do I now have control? Exactly. And because the reality is that stuff will always be a part of you. It will, every once in a while, it rears its ugly head. As someone who is knee deep in her healing journey, and I would say I do not, at one point in my life, I met criteria for, at the time, post-traumatic stress disorder, I would have met criteria for CPTSD. At this time in my life, I do not meet those clinical qualifications. Because of my healing. Now, are there moments where I have a flashback or, you know, I dig my heels in a little bit and I see like those trauma reactions coming up? Absolutely. But the difference now is that I'm kind of so far into my healing journey that I'm able to address them pretty quickly and identify them pretty quickly, that I am not kind of in chaos of my own trauma response anymore. And I think that that is one of the things that we kind of look for when we, when it comes to trauma recovery. It's not, we can't make it so those things have never happened. We can't make it so that you don't remember those things, or those things have happened. We can't change the past. It's just about how are they impacting us moving forward in our life? And do they have control over us?
That's a beautiful way to put it. Are you going to talk, Jess?
No, I was just saying, absolutely.
Yeah. I think like, agree with everything you said about like, what does recovery mean and all that. And I kind of think like, I don't know, like if I zoom out and I really think about life journeys, healing journeys, like when do we ever really arrive? Like, honestly, like when do we arrive at the version of ourselves where we're like, yep, I made it. Cause there's always going to be something that kind of comes out. Like KBI said, like I might have a flashback still, or I might still kind of struggle with certain things. You know what I mean? But it doesn't mean that I'm not recovered, but am I? Like, you know what I mean? It's like a big question mark, but I think it really is like defining it for yourself. And for me, like personally, I had to like, I don't know, because I'm a nerd, I had to make it measurable and objective. I'm like, when I'm able to do A, B, and C, or like when I'm able to like not have to worry about A, B, and C, and D, and like all that stuff, then I'm like, then I'm healed. And guess what? Plot twist, something else will always pop up. Like, you know, so I think it's really unique, and it really just depends on the nature of the trauma too. Cause I mean, I think with trauma, it changes people, and it really is hard to escape, especially when you have those flashbacks and those thoughts and it feels like it's almost embedded within you. It's difficult. Yeah. You know, it's really, really, really difficult to overcome those things.
Well, and I also think it's important to name the things that are causing distress in your life. Mm-hmm. Because for me, I will always seek a semblance of stability because of the instability that I had experienced. I will always look for the most stable option. I am not a major risk taker in my life. That is a trauma response for me. Is that impacting my daily life and impacting my life negatively because I look for those things? No. Now, and so I don't focus my time and I don't identify that as a harmful kind of piece in my trauma recovery, because it's not playing a negative impact, but I do identify it as a trauma response for myself specifically. Not saying if you seek stability that's a trauma response. Yeah. For me specifically, like that is a trauma response.
I think this is our last question.
So Emily says, this could be an emotional question, but
oh gosh,
any words of encouragement for people dealing with CPTSD? I've been through what feels like hell for many years, and now I'm finally starting EMDR with a therapist I feel safe with. I've never felt this hopeful before in my life.
Oh, Emily, I love this for you, girl. Hell yeah.
I know.
I love this.
I was primed. Since it started with, this might be an emotional question, now I'm like tearing up.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. And like remembering like healing is not linear and it will be messy. And there will be days where you are thrown back 5 steps and you have to claw your way back up. And that doesn't mean anything negative. It just, that's how healing works. And some days are going to be hard and some days are going to be easy and it's going to be messy and scary and you're going to be angry at the world and you're going to be happy at the world. And I think it's just validating every version of that through your healing process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's holding. I think one thing that gives me hope in my, it's just personal, my own healing journey with trauma is like holding space for every version of myself, like KBI is saying, and like also kind of coming to a place of like acceptance versus agreeing. Like, I don't agree with what happened to me, but I have to accept that this is kind of part of my story right now. And it doesn't define who I am, but it kind of impacts me, you know, in relationships. And I might have days that are really, really, really hard, you know, and I might have days that are easier, but it's just so deeply personal and unique. And I want to give like a clinical like answer, but I think the only way to really capture it is maybe personal because it is so personal, you know? So for you, it might be, it might look different than that. Who knows? It just might look different, but.
Yeah. I mean, what came to mind other than I feel like just Emily sharing a little bit of her story, like gives anybody listening that might be struggling with it hope. But, you know, you can't change what has happened to you, but you can take power or make change in how you want to move forward with it. And that doesn't mean it's easy. And I know that also comes with some privilege, as we've been talking about with CPTSD, you know, the traumas can be inescapable, things like that. But, you know, once you are out of the trauma, assuming you are safe, you can make choices moving forward. And like I said, and we always say on this podcast, there is privilege in that. But even if you don't have access to therapy, you know, listening to podcasts, connecting with other people online, learning tips and tricks to help you through can be really powerful.
Absolutely. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us for this week's episode on complex post-traumatic stress disorder. It's definitely one of those new up-and-coming topics talked a lot about on social media. It's also been a really requested topic, highly requested from you guys. So I'm glad we were finally able to touch upon it. I hope that you learned a little bit for this episode. Share this episode with a friend, share it with a family member, send it in the group chat. And we thank you for coming to group each week. Remember to rate, subscribe, all of the above, and we will see you next week in group therapy. Bye.
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 Peace.
Peace.